Before we get going, I want to take a moment to tell you about something really exciting for high school sports fans across the country. SB Live Sports has launched a free iPhone and Android app featuring the latest high school sports news here in Washington and across the country. With the SB Live Sports app, it's now even easier to follow your favorite team and tailor your experience to your interests. With real-time scores and news alerts, as well as video highlights, podcasts, photo galleries, rankings, game coverage, and much more, the app delivers on the content you want in one convenient place. The SB Live Sports app features exclusive content from on-the-ground reporters across the country, and it's the number one source for Washington high school sports fans, with coverage from reporters Todd Millis, myself, Andy Bueller, as well as SB Live's preeminent basketball mind and recruiting expert Dan Dickow. The SB Live Sports app is available at no charge in the Apple App Store and Google Play Store. The SB Live Sports app. Download it today. Welcome to another episode of the SB Live Washington Podcast, your weekly conversation about high school sports across the Evergreen State. I'm Andy Bueller, reporter with SB Live, and joining me as always are the duo you can count on. First, he's SB Live's preeminent basketball mind. He's the host of the ISO with Dan Dickow, bringing that podcast to you 5 days a week for the month of March. Live from Vegas, it's Dan Dickow. Also here is the prodigal son of Tacoma. He's your pal and mine, whether he likes it or not. Todd Billis, senior reporter with SB Live. What's up, guys? How we doing?
I'm good. I can't complain too much. I was one of a few people in the Orleans arena last night to call the Gonzaga BYU game on Westwood One Radio. It was surreal to be there. And, you know, then I kind of look back and kind of prep for our conversation. And I'm looking at all these different things and flashbacks to a year ago where we had the state tournament in Tacoma to what we're doing now with high school football in the state of Washington with very limited capacity. I'm looking forward to moving to the next phase where we can get more people in person cheering on and encouraging these high school student athletes to do what they love.
My ritual from my days at the Tacoma News Tribune, especially after the state basketball tournament, were to get on a plane, go cover some Gonzaga basketball, and then head over to the Pac-12s. Obviously later when the Pac-12s came to Vegas, love the Orleans arena with a bunch of Gonzaga fans in it. Would be weird to be in Dan's position this year. I was in the T-Mobile last year for one game. I flew down, got there for the Wazoo game. They beat Colorado, and then they announced that not only that fans weren't being allowed, but then soon after it was the tournament was canceled. So I can't wait for this to kind of go back to a normal state. I'm missing my basketball in person, especially with big crowds.
I am too. And that state basketball tournament, we've talked about it a lot over the last year of that being kind of the last big event that we covered before the world changed. But Todd, was that a Pac-12 tournament when things got shut down? Was that kind of your moment of, okay, this is bigger than we expected. This is going to be something different.
Yeah, absolutely. No question. And then, you know, I mean, you're in Vegas and there's so many options on the strip to, you know, gamble and eat. And then they start closing down, you know, some of the restaurants and stuff. It just looked like Vegas was kind of closing before my eyes. So it's interesting. I cut this trip short and left the day after just because I didn't know if I'd get out of Vegas. It was a really weird time to be in Sin City. So I can't wait to get back when it's a lot more normal. Cause I love this week with all the conference tournaments going on. It's a great week to be in Vegas watching some basketball, not only in person, but on TV.
Well, it is. And you know, coming up, we've got an interview with Cooper Christensen. He's an all-state receiver, defensive back with Royal, defending 1A state champ. We're going to talk about what it's going to take to get to phase three, what the outlook on the basketball season is. But while we're on the Vegas topic, I want to ask you guys, Dan, I don't know how many days you're in Vegas for your broadcast duties with these conference tournaments, but I spent a couple of 5-6 day trips working in Vegas a few years ago, covering the WCCs with the Gonzaga Bulletin when I was in college, and was kind of my first Vegas experience, and learned very quickly that there's a certain amount of days that at least I consider to be too many days in Vegas. There's a fine balance of you know, how fun that city can be. Of course, you know, it, being there in a work setting is very different than being there in a play setting. But I wanted to ask you guys, because Todd, you're the Vegas expert. You go every year. Dan, I take it you have been on several trips yourself through your journey. What to you guys is too many days in Vegas, and what's the right amount of time?
You got to be in and out to Vegas, that's for sure. You know, I'm not a big kind of go out party guy, but I've been here a number of times. I think the first time I was here was in high school for AAU basketball. There were like 8-9 day stretches where you're playing like in these big events and playing. And even then I realized this is old. I don't want to be here that long. I've been here for different broadcast reasons, for opportunities. And those are usually in and out. This time I'm here for about 3 days. The longest stretch I think I probably was ever here was when I was on the Blazers coaching staff for Summer League. I think it was 9 or 10 days. And literally it was like pulling hair. I was ready to go home after about 4 days. But the one thing is I had scouting responsibilities. I had film breakdown responsibilities. We had practice and game responsibilities. So you kind of stayed on a pretty regimented schedule. But if anybody comes down here to have fun for more than about 36 to 48 hours, God bless you. Hopefully you get back and everything is back to normal in your life in no time.
Yeah, it was pretty revealing when I had this conversation with Ryan Moore. He's a PGA Tour golfer from Puyallup, covered him a lot when I was at the Tacoma News Tribune. He's lived in Vegas now for the better part of, 15, 18 years. He went to school at UNLV. It was very revealing. I said, hey, when was the last time you were on the Strip? And he says, I don't ever go on the Strip. Like, people who live in Vegas never go on the Strip. So there's obviously a distinction between Las Vegas and Las Vegas Strip. And I think that's what you're kind of referring to, right? How long is too long on the Strip, Andy?
Right.
And I agree with Dan, 48 to 72 hours. I start, even though there's a lot going on and it's a huge spectacle. I mean, I love being there for a short amount of time, but after about 72 hours, I start thinking, where's the nearest golf course, or how long will it take me to get to spring training? So, there's a lot of trouble to get into in Vegas too. So about 72 hours for me.
Well, it's overload of your sensual, or your eyes, your ears, everything. It's an overload. And especially when you have to focus in and do work, whether it's as a coach, whether it's as a young player in the conference tournament at the college level or at the high school level with these AAU tournaments, or what I do with broadcasting, or you guys do as a journalist as well. It's overload. You're walking in and all you hear is crazy noises. All you hear is sound. You see things. It is an overload that it takes a while to really kind of just settle down from.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I appreciate your guys' input. I hope that informs the listener to some degree or not, but a lot of great basketball that happens this time of year down there. So I wish you the best in your broadcasting duties, Dan, and all the action that you see while you're down there. But up in Washington, the high school sports season, as we know, is underway, and just now across the state as we record this, by the end of this week, every league across the state will have started their football season. That, of course, is happening to varying degrees of restrictions depending on what league, what district, and what part of the state you're in. But they're all working with the same framework that comes from state officials that say that there's a maximum capacity of 200 spectators, fans, allowed in stadiums. That includes players, personnel. We've gone over this in the past. We talked to WIA Executive Board President Tim Thompson about that a couple weeks ago, about how ADs have to kind of make that decision on who to let in, who not to let in, and that obviously depends on the size of the school. But there's been a ton of of backlash and pressure from parents who a lot of parts of the state are not allowed into stadiums to see their sons play football, their daughters cheer, whatever it may be. And no matter what way you spin it, until everything's open, there's going to be outside pressure at every step of this. First, it's let's get the kids back onto the field. Let's worry about that and that at the very least. And now once we've seen what that looks like and how it's being pulled off in these empty stadiums, the kids are playing in front of, there's pressure from parents and all that that want something more than watching their kids from a chain link fence or from a stream. And so I talked to WI executive director Mick Hoffman as we record this last night. And he said, based on what the conversations the WI has been having with state officials, the health department, the governor's office, that he feels optimistic that that spectator number is going to change at some point this month. Now, we don't know exactly. We're in phase two of this plan. We don't know what phase three is going to look like. The basketball season hinges on reaching a phase three. But case numbers are down in Washington, 20% drop in cases on a 14-day trend, 50% drop in deaths, 33% drop in hospitalizations, according to the New York Times. So I ask you guys, as we go through this every week, are you guys encouraged that there is going to be some change in reopening in this state soon, just like Hoffman thinks there may be?
You know, I believe and I understand. Don't quote me, Andy. You can check this before you maybe release it and kind of put it in our notes that I think Inslee at the end of this week is going to offer kind of new guidance for the state and the counties, and hopefully that is the case. But I'm one of those parents. So my daughter is a cheerleader on the east side of the state, Mount Spokane High School. Last Friday or Saturday, I can't remember the day, they had a football game. I drove to the parking lot and watched, sitting in my car with my other kids, for about 15 to 20 minutes. I couldn't see much, but at least I was there. I was supporting her. I was supporting the Mount Spokane kind of sports community. And there was a lot of parents standing on the outside of the stadium, peeking through the fence and seeing what they could see. And obviously, you can't get in, but nobody has control of what's going on the outside. So I can only imagine that's going on at stadiums and football fields across the state. But yeah, you're right. Numbers are trending in the right direction. The only problem to me is there's been moving goalposts throughout this whole thing. So hopefully we can get a little bit of clearance, a little bit of guidance on what really needs to happen so that people can plan. Because that's one of the hardest things for families is what's next? What do we need to do? What does this community need to do? And hopefully we're just about there where we can get back to almost normal.
Yeah, disappointing for football. I wish this would have happened earlier. Some leagues will maybe get to have fuller stadiums, you know, at the end of their season, like the 4A NPSL, 4A Kinko. We talked about those two leagues beginning this weekend. But in time for you know, this slate of spring sports, which is all outdoor sports. So it's good news for baseball, softball, track and field, boys soccer. But I look at this as a, you know, kind of two steps ahead. You know, if they're going to open it up, more people are going to be allowed in. That's a great sign for basketball. I think it's a sport that you and the three of us have sort of looked at, you know, in season three as sort of a 50-50. That would be, you know, I think that's a great sign that we'll see some basketball here in May, which I know all three of us are, you know, kind of champing at the bit to do. And wrestling. I mean, those two sports have always been sort of on the fence as high-risk sports. I know we got to get to season three. But that's what I take from the news that you broke, Andy, with in your conversations with Mick is, yeah, you know, those are encouraging signs as we move closer to season three, where we can see some basketball and some wrestling.
Yeah, and there's basketball coaches around the state that are hoping that, you know, even if there's strict guidelines that are set in place or benchmarks that need to be met that are made clear in phase three? Because that's the big question here is like, okay, phase one and phase two, that jump, we knew that there were those trend-based metrics that needed to be met in order to jump phases. Now we're still waiting for a blueprint on what it's going to take to jump to phase three. And so we're looking at all the tea leaves and saying, okay, things look promising. They're trending in the right direction, but what is it actually going to take? There's hope, at least from some basketball coaches I've talked to that have said that that even if there's benchmarks that come out and are not met exactly to a T, trend-based benchmarks, you know, back in January, there was kind of a reversal at the state level where they said, okay, you know, initially these first two regions of our, you know, eight regions in our reopening plan, these first couple regions are good to go and everybody else, you have to wait. And before too long, they kind of just said, all right, everything's open. All right, everything's in phase two, not wide open. But there was a little bit of a concession that was made. And so I think, you know, there's not only hope that these trends are promising, but that that the tide can be turning on, you know, the state's approach to this reopening plan. And as Mick Hoffman said, the two big things that hang in the air here are case rates and vaccinations. And can we get more of vaccination so that we can get closer to herd immunity? For the WIA that's organizing this and planning this, that's their biggest key to doing that. And so it's promising to see you know, the vaccine numbers you know, going up and the folks vaccinated. I think the CDC said yesterday that there's more people in the states vaccinated than have contracted COVID, so that's a good sign, and it'll continue to trend in that direction. So lots to keep an eye out for. As Dan said, we'll expect to see some news forthcoming on what that phase three might look like. So keep an eye out there. All this, as it has been over the past year, is going to be directed from the top down. And so everyone's kind of waiting as you guys are, the listener, and as we are paying attention to this. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Cooper Christensen, receiver, defensive back at Royal, All-State, defending state champ, and a real stud. Todd and I sat down with him and talked about football as a jumping off point. But Todd, we talked a lot more about football. What were your takeaways from that conversation?
Oh, his family history is fascinating, and how it helped sort of found the small town. I think everybody knows where Royal City is by now. Is if you're driving from Vantage to Pullman to go see the Cougs, it's the first town you come to on your left hand side, about 35 miles up the hill. So his family was integral, as we found out in our conversation, in that town becoming sort of a vibrant farming community in the 30s and 40s.
No question. So stick with us for that full conversation. Cooper is a great interview, a great kid, and has a fascinating backstory. So we're going to take a quick break. Leave it here. I want to take a moment to tell you about our friends at Washington Federal. Washington Federal is a local bank and portfolio lender with more than 200 branches across 8 states, more than 32,000 fee-free ATMs, drive-up ATMs, 24/7 online and mobile banking, and Washington Federal is a proud sponsor of SB Live Sports and SB Live Washington. The folks at Washington Federal care deeply about high school sports and the communities that support them across the state of Washington and beyond. Head to wafdbank.com to learn how Washington Federal can help you meet your financial goals. That's wafdbank.com. Washington Federal, a neighbor you can count on. Welcome back to the podcast. Andy Bueller here. Todd Millis is with me. One of us on this podcast right now caught for 210 yards and 3 touchdowns in their season debut last week. And we all know that it was not Todd or me. Who was it, you ask? That would be Royal senior Cooper Christensen. Excited to have him here on the podcast. Cooper, how is life right now, and how's it been back playing football?
Good. It's been great getting back into the swing of things. It's been a long off season, longer than usual, and it's just good to be back, and thanks for having me.
Cooper, you could have just eased into your season. I mean, you know, handful of catches, 70 yards, a touchdown, but no, you just had to, I guess you're going for broke, at least early on against Eastmont. Huh? I know it was it one of those games with Eastmont where just everything was clicking and you and Caleb just had some things going.
Yeah, it was fun to see this whole offseason we've been working on just being, I guess, knowing each other's play style and knowing what we should do when that opportunity comes. And I think we started right where we left off last year, which is good to know, because the year before last year, I think we kind of struggled the first half of the season, but to get back into the swing of things in a smooth way, I think is a big difference and that shows in the score of the game.
Well, you guys had were dealt such a tough hand. Obviously you want to be playing, and throughout the whole shutdown, you're sitting there going, you know, hey, whenever we get the opportunity, we're going to be ready. And you got kind of a 2-week head start saying, all right, the season's coming up. And a lot of teams so far in these first couple of weeks since football has returned across the state have understandably struggled with whether it's conditioning, whether it's, you know, getting used to playing with one another, whether it's just, you know, timing and everything that involves, you know, preparing for a high school football season on the fly. But you guys have such a strong start, you know, coming off a 1A state championship against a 4A opponent. You guys are playing all big schools this shortened season. What do you think was the key to starting so strong?
I think the biggest thing is our experience in the weight room. All off season, we would go in and work in the weight room, and especially in the summer, we do hard work on the farm all day, then have to go in and lift weights. So it's kind of almost like a double workout in the way. And then just remembering the little things, what we need to do on the field, and keep each other up and kind of just play as a team, I guess, is the biggest thing as well.
So for people, for listeners here, maybe on the west side that don't know a lot about Royal, the 1A, class 1A state powerhouse, both you, a senior, and your quarterback, also a senior, same last name. How many times do you get, and you're not related, how many times do you get confused as brothers, as cousins, as anything related? Do you guys get a chuckle out of that? How have you guys handled that over the years, especially considering that Royal City is not the biggest city in Eastern Washington?
I think we've been getting it our whole lives since we're kind of younger in our family, so our older brothers would get it a lot, and I think it just kind of we got the same thing, and then getting used to it. I guess I've always been used to it. I mean, I don't necessarily blame the people that think we're related, and it's not their fault, I guess, but yeah, we get it a lot, and it's just kind of we laugh when it happens, but it's like, yeah, it happens too much, it's kind of getting old. So
well, I've almost written it instinctually when I've written about you guys, and I've had to catch myself before I make myself look dumb in print. But there's some interesting backstory there. You guys aren't related, but there's a ton of family history. We were talking about this before we started recording. Tell us a little bit about how your two families, same last name, same spelling, but not related, how your two families kind of go back a ways.
So both our grandparents were pioneers to the area from an agricultural standpoint. They both came here pretty early on, and just ever since, their family's been grown into these two huge families, and they're both similar in literally every single way besides being related. And then they've done a lot for us to succeed here. And it's awesome to see that kind of fold out.
It sounds like you were saying before we started taping, is that your grandparents were ones that really kind of journaled a lot of the history and the, whatever, 20s, 30s, 40s. How much have you kind of delved into that, read up about some of the challenges that your family and obviously Caleb's family as well had when they came to Royal City early on and trying to get the farming the farming business going?
I read a lot about it. I find it super interesting. Some crazy stories is that first there was, so my dad's family is the parents, and they had seven kids, and they would all sleep in one room. Their house is one room, and they would all sleep in there. And then during the spring season, my grandma had to put the plates upside down because it would get so windy that the dust would go through the house and get dirt all over the food. So there's a lot of crazy stuff like that. And then just some other ones is just the closest bathroom was like 100 feet away. Like they had like a porta potty outside their house that they had to use the bathroom and kind of shower and stuff like that.
What kind of stories do your parents tell you about growing up? Did they grow up farmers, sons and daughters of farmers?
Yeah. So my dad did. My dad was the youngest. So he doesn't necessarily remember those tough experiences. When he was older, the farm grew a lot and he kind of got the better end of those experiences. But yeah, he always shared experiences of his farming growing up, and it's kind of similar to what it is now, actually.
Well, tell us about the Christensen home. How many pets? How many do you live on a farm? Do you have farm animals? Do you live in a normal house? I mean, tell us a little bit about what your guys' property now here. What this is 80, 90 years later after your grandparents here sort of helped found the city.
So I actually live in the house that my grandparents built, that little house at first. And it's been added on 7 times, so it's a little bigger now. But
wow.
Both my parents are school teachers, and the farm that my grandpa started is now run by my uncle and cousins. So during the summer, I work with them. But we live right in the middle of the farm, like I said, that same house my grandpa built. And we're super involved with it anyway, even though my dad isn't a part of it anymore.
That's so cool. And just to hear, you know, you've been able to, your grandparents aren't around anymore. And the fact that you've been able to hear not only so much about, you know, from relatives who lived with them and knew them, but the fact that they left so much documentation of that time in their lives, that's really cool. That must be neat for you to dive in and kind of feel like you're immersed in their story.
Yeah, it's awesome. I can read it whenever I want. It's just a good access for me to have.
So let's rewind a little bit. When you grew up, you're the younger end of several siblings. Did you get involved in all the sports at an early age? And when did you know that, you know, football was the one that was going to be your separator?
So growing up and still now, actually, baseball is my favorite sport. I love baseball. And growing up, I thought I would be like, that was my main focus, I guess, just playing baseball. And then after my sophomore year, and then going into my junior year, I think that's when I kind of realized, like, I need to transition my focus into football because that's where I'm going to get the most opportunities from.
Of your older brothers, Coop, you know, Zach, Tanner, Sam, which one had the most influence on you in terms of a work ethic standpoint and how to approach sort of sports in general?
I'd say Sam. He was on the 2015 team that won that first state championship that kind of started this whole winning streak. And he had a great work ethic. He would work out a ton, and just kind of that those group and guys in general are the people that kind of started this tradition of this high expectation of Royal football. And I think it's starting to show in a lot of different ways in these past years.
And you have a younger brother, Seth, who's still coming through the ranks. What kind of influence have you had on him? What kind of relationship do you have with your younger brother, especially when it comes to sports that you've obviously established a name in?
Mm-hmm. I think I try to work with him pretty one-on-one at practice. He's going to be a receiver as well. And I just try to work with him about the little things, because that's a big importance. Like, you can't, like, not everyone's going to be the fastest and stuff like that. But if you work on the little things, that's going to be the separator between people. And I just work with him on that a lot.
That 2015 state title, where were you?
I was in eighth grade and just cheering my brother on like crazy in the stands.
Yeah. What was that like, you know, going there and seeing that game and seeing, you know, that stage? And then fast forward, you know, what, four years later and you're there, obviously not the same venue, but, you know, you're on that stage and playing a pretty big part in it.
It's almost like a dream in a way for my eighth grade self. Like, growing up, Royal football's the biggest thing in your life. Like, I remember if we would lose a game, I'd come home just pissed off. Like, when I was like 8 years old, like, I had no reason to be mad, but I was just kind of fired up. And I think just like this friend, like this, these past years, like, we've all been big into it. And that's because of the older guys and the tradition that they've started. And I think seeing that stage for that first time that I kind of can't remember is what motivated me a lot, because that's our biggest goal in a high school football season.
In the summer, I remember talking to your quarterback, Caleb, and he had just talked about through the pandemic when, you know, around the state and around the country, there was so much that was shut down. But he had just said that you guys had really continued to work hard in the weight room. And that was something that was a separator, as you kind of alluded to earlier. And that's something that, you know, I've when you're a high school sports writer, you see a lot of videos on Twitter come across your timeline of people lifting, and they all kind of look the same. I saw one of you a couple weeks ago that I'm sitting there. I can't remember if you were cleaning or something, and I'm sitting there going, holy cow. I know you've transformed your body a good amount, and your athleticism has allowed you to become the player that you are. When did you know, at what age did you kind of learn and see exactly how to do that?
Me and Caleb started eighth grade year, and then Derek and Avery, who are a year younger than me, they started seventh grade year. So we've all started around that time. And then at first we would go light and just kind of get the form down. So when we're older, like as of now, we can move heavier weight just because of how good our form is. I think that's a huge difference. And also we got a new weights coach when I was in eighth grade. And he's been with us ever since, and he's been a huge difference for everyone individually and their success in the weight room.
Coop, I know you're a guy that likes to show off the tumbling gymnastics ability too. I don't know if people on the podcast know that, you know, you can do some backflips pretty easily. Where'd that skill come from? How'd you hone that?
So I get that more on my mom's side of the family. They're from Idaho and down south, and they all like to ski and kind of the extreme sport stuff, which is kind of interesting. So my dad's side is all football, basketball, baseball, and then my mom's side is all these skiers and wakeboarders and stuff like that. And so every time we go down there, they always show us off, and then just being our family being competitive, we always try to match that. And I guess there's some quickness and stuff like that that's involved with that, and I think has helped a little bit, but I think that's where all the tumbling stuff like that comes from.
I think back to when I was your age, the thing that was most holding me back from doing a backflip outside of the athleticism was trying a backflip. Doing it for the first time, I mean, that's there's a lot of margin for error there. What was your very first backflip? Was it like into a pool? Was it on skis? Or was it just, you know, standing flat footed?
My first one was on the trampoline. I was probably about six or 7 years old.
Oh man.
And then from there, I would just go like into pools. And then there's a three-story rope swing here in Royal. And we like to do like double backflips off that into the pond. And then my first one on the ground was like about 2 years ago. And I just, my brothers making fun of me because my three older brothers can do one and I couldn't. They kept giving me crap. I was like, all right, well, I'm going to go do it right now. And then after a little motivation, I was able to do it on the ground finally. And then, yeah.
One of the things that Coach Allred said when I talked to him earlier today was he thinks that you haven't really realized how good you can be in football, that things come to, you know, if you're able to catch a tough pass or some recruiter calls you and says, hey, we want to offer you a scholarship or what, you're just sort of, hey, this is really cool. Like it's, you're very humble, but he sort of thinks you just haven't realized how great you can be. Is there any truth to that? Are you starting to realize how good a football player or how good a baseball player you can be?
Yeah, definitely. I think that I've realized it this past summer, just getting recruited and just going to camps and performing and stuff like that. But I try to be humble every day because I think that's one of the best examples I can set for my teammates, just not being prideful and stuff like that. Because I think if I let it get to my head, I'm not going to work as hard, and I always want to I just want to keep working harder so I can be the best I can be. And I think I'm lucky to realize that, because not a lot of guys do once they hit a certain point in their success. And I just kind of try to remember that every time I step foot in the weight room or get a letter from a coach or something like that.
It's a really admirable approach. Last week on the podcast, we talked to Luke Holcomb. He's the quarterback at Puyallup, and he shared he's a younger brother also, and his older brothers were good football players, good quarterbacks too, and shared some pretty funny family dynamics. And I got to imagine there's a part of you that when you talk about the humility part of it, you've got older brothers there to kind of keep you humble. What's the dynamic there like? How have they rooted you on these past couple of years?
They've been huge. Just growing up, they've been just being a competitive family. It's been huge. We compete in every little thing we can. And I'm not going to say it, but we give, like, I'm not humble when I'm around my brothers. Like, I let them know, like, stuff. And then we kind of let that play out when we have our little games or whatever. But I don't even know what to say. They've just been a huge blessing, just athletic-wise. I think they've helped me a lot more than I realized, than they realized, too.
Cooper, what's it like playing for a guy that's going to, you know, he's the all-time winningest coach right now in percentage. He's in the Hall of Fame. He's going to go down as one of the best football coaches the state's ever seen in Wiley Allred.
I don't even really realize it. I mean, I've grown up with him, but he's been there like my whole life. And just when I see him, I don't necessarily think about his accolades. Just more of a coach that can help me and my teammate gets better. So I think that kind of helps. But when I do sit down and think about the program and stuff like that, it makes me realize how lucky I am and how I need to take advantage of this opportunity so that I can set myself up for success later in life.
Well, taking advantage of it, you're off to not a bad start with some success at the state level. And then you guys come back this year. I know there's not a traditional state playoffs or state championship, but you guys have a really fun schedule. When that schedule was released, it's, you know, 1A schedule against, you're a 1A team playing, 4A teams. You start with Eastmont last week. You play Wenatchee. You guys have some good opponents lined up. What was that like playing more of a localized schedule against those bigger schools? And what's the perception? Do you know guys from those schools just based on your location? And what's kind of the perception of Royal as a 1A power?
We know a lot of guys from Moses, and I knew one guy from Eastmont. And I think just being able to show that 1A is, like, even though it's just a smaller classification, doesn't mean the athletes aren't as good, I guess. And I think we're pretty excited to show that off this year. And we just need to keep doing our thing. I think we're going to do everything right. We can't really freak out about anything. We've been super confident in our abilities, not overconfident, but knowing that we have the ability to beat these guys and beat them good and kind of show the state what we're all about.
How many times have you watched the state championship game, especially the last few minutes?
Probably like 20 times at least. I just get goosebumps every time I watch it. It's just awesome.
Well, it was a heck of a game. The fact that one of the best parts about covering the state championship every year, before last year in the Tacoma Dome, was that if you showed up, you could watch every game in one place without leaving your seat. And Todd and I were split up at different stadiums last year. And so it was a little bit of a disappointment not to see you guys live. But that was a heck of a game to follow. I can imagine that number 20 is going to, exponentially grow as the years go on, especially after you leave.
Yeah, I mean, it was huge to see that way we finished that year. And just, I hope we can grow off that. I know we are. We have so far, but season's not over exactly. And I think the important thing about that game is we knew, because they got up pretty quick towards the end of that game. We didn't have a lot of time to get back and score. But I think the biggest thing is we stayed calm and focused, and we knew we were going to win. I know when they scored that last touchdown, me and Caleb kind of looked at each other, like, gave that look that we're going to come back and score. And we had confidence that we would do that and belief in each other. And that's the big thing about that.
Cooper, I should say. I'm really, really appreciate you joining us today on the podcast. It was great, you know, learning a lot about you as a football player, you as a person. Before we let you go, I can only imagine that you've gotten a few calls from college coaches inquiring and vying for, you know, your talents at the next level. What has the recruitment process been like for you, and where are you at with that now?
Recently, it's been a lot of smaller schools, just because the bigger schools already have kind of their group of guys that they signed. And it's still been a huge blessing to see that process and kind of see that people want me, I guess. It's good to see, and I think it's good for the community too. I just hope I can keep performing and doing well to get more opportunities like that.
Royals 1-0. They are the defending state champs at the 1A level. One of their stars in their football team is Cooper Christensen. Cooper, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was a good time.
All right, we're back. Andy Bueller here. Todd Millis is with me, as well as Dan Dickow. We've got a new segment this week, trying it out and seeing how it fits. It's called Past and Present. The idea is each of us will come up with two athletes who grabbed your attention over the past week. One current, present Washington High School athlete, and one former Washington High School athlete. This can be as broad, as general as you guys want it, you can really take it any way you want. So who wants to kick us off? Todd, you want to kick us off?
Sure. My past athlete would be Andrew Putnam. He's the former Life Christian golfer. Talked to him last year before the Masters. It was his Masters debut. He was battling some back problems, almost withdrew before the Masters. His back injury ailments were so bad. But I think he's put that behind him, starting to flash form. Has really been on a good streak here on the PGA Tour. Played a really tough Arnold Palmer golf course at Bay Hill on Sunday, one of the few under par rounds. He goes into the Players' Championship this week with some momentum. Looks like the Andrew Putnam here of the last two or three years, a guy that, you know, by PGA Tour standards doesn't hit it enormously far, but is a really good putter. Good to see Andrew kind of get back on track. And my present day athlete's a guy that I saw Friday night in the Eastside Catholic O'Day game. And it's none other than the great JT Tuimoloau. You know how great he is. You know how great he is in football. You know how great he is in basketball. But to watch him play and impact the game on both sides of the ball, you know, he had four or five tackles for loss against O'Day in that great offensive line. But to watch him run at 280 pounds. And I had the video clip on Twitter, and a lot of people commented on it. You know, Brandon Huffman said, hey, if this guy didn't want to be, if he wasn't the best defensive end prospect in the country, he could be the best tight end prospect in the country. Dan, you've seen him play basketball. You know, he could go play at least D2 somewhere, maybe a lower level D1 as an undersized post. I mean, to watch an athlete like that with so many options, great at so many things. And Friday night was a huge reminder, especially on his touchdown catch here in the fourth quarter. He's a special athlete. And we're fortunate to get to watch him over the next last three or four months of his high school career.
Yeah. To touch on that, Todd, first off, if you've got a back injury and you're going to pull out of the Masters, can I be the guy to replace you? Because I want to play Augusta as bad as anybody. That would be something I would volunteer for. And then, yeah, JT, like you talked about, he's going to have a tremendous career in football. He would have had a nice opportunity in basketball if that's what he chose. My past and present, Andy, I got to stay because it's March Madness. You guys all know me well enough. It's all basketball all the time. Corey Kispert. What more can you say? He was at Kings. He won state tournaments and state titles for Kings at the 1A level in Yakima. He is leading Gonzaga. As of right now, he is the all-time winningest percentage player in NCAA basketball history. It's pretty impressive. I mean, I think after last night, 121 wins against 10 losses in his career at Gonzaga. That is amazing. And then he's going to be an All-American. I think he's going to be a first-team All-American. If he falls down to a second-slot All-American, whoever's forming that list, there's something wrong with that person filling those ballots out that day. So I'll go past Corey Kispert. Present, Paulo Banchero. I don't know if you guys have been following some of these spring, late winter, spring tournaments, the grind sessions, all these different things that, that guys are playing in right now, that they have to travel out of the state of Washington to play in, which is okay, but they're traveling and they're playing. He's been dominant. I mean, some of the things that he is doing makes you think that if there's a better high school player in this in the country right now, please show him to me, because inside, outside, handle it, shoot it, finish at the rim, make plays for others, plays hard, physical. He checks every single box. And I know Chet Holmgren, a kid from Minnesota, is ranked number one. I'd like to see it. And hopefully Holmgren decides for me as a Gonzaga grad and alum, hopefully Holmgren chooses to go there. But Paulo Banchero, good Lord, that kid is, he's the next truly great player from the state of Washington.
No question. That's two great picks, Dan. You stole my Corey Kispert pick, although you deserve first dibs on it since you're there covering. But those three threes out of the break on a rough shooting night is the reason he is who he is. But yeah, no, on your Paulo comment, he's playing with BFL Prep, which is an upstart club program out of the Seattle area. Barry Jones, who had stints, he worked with the Spurs. He played college over, I think, in North Carolina. He's a Seattle guy, and I wrote a story on him in December about that club that he started is kind of making opportunities for kids around the state, including my pick for Present, who was playing on the same team in the same game as you might have watched, Dan. We the highlights are up on the site right now, but that's John Christofilos at O'Day, who went with BFL Prep over to the Battle at the Rock in South Carolina on Tuesday night. He had 27 points versus the NC Storm and 2023 stud Mikey Williams, five-star in a year without high school hoops. It's nice to see somebody get some national shine like John Christofilos. So he should have a bright future at Creighton. I know, you know, I saw a bunch of national pundits last night singing his praises after that performance. And so nice to see that from John, especially when, you know, these past few months he should have been under normal circumstances playing his senior campaign, which hopefully he'll get the chance to do. But my past, since Kispert's off the board, I'm going to have to go with somebody that, Todd, I'm curious to see if you know him, but Alfonso Anderson is the Mountain West Sixth Man of the Year this year. He had, like, you know, for Utah State, around 7 points a game, shooting somewhere in the 40% range, almost three rebounds a game, and you know, has had a pretty good season for Utah State. But to see him, he's a Garfield grad, Tacoma native, to see him get that award was certainly nice. And Todd, I'm wondering, did you ever cover him in Tacoma and in his childhood?
Yeah, I went to school with his mom, in fact.
Oh, really?
His mom. Yeah. He was part of that really good Wilson group with David Jenkins Jr. And then went to and then finished up at Garfield, and then has had a kind of a adventurous college career. He settled nicely at Utah State, gives them some real depth on the bench. So a nice honor for a young man that's, you know, probably at the later stages of his basketball career. I don't know if he'll get a pro opportunity. I'm hoping he will, but yeah, I mean, you look at what happened with Pierce County and the chances, how many Pierce County products that might play in the NCAA tournament. Ja'Cory McLaughlin, the player of the year, you know, down in California. That's I think it's Santa Barbara, right? I think, yeah. It was a good week for Pierce County products on the award slate. So, and Alfonso Anderson, obviously, Sixth Man of the Year.
As the prodigal son of Tacoma, I had to have you weigh in on that. So I appreciate you doing so. That's it for this week's podcast. ScorebookLive.com/Washington is your home for high school sports news and information across this state. If you listen to our new ad before the show, download the SB Live Sports app, fellas. How do you like scrolling through videos and articles and scores on this new app? Pretty sweet, huh?
It's unbelievable. I've downloaded it. Obviously, we beta tested it before it was released to the masses, but if anybody is a high school sports fan that follows our Scorebook Live Washington website or listens to our podcast, you got to download this app because it's even more at your fingertips. And who wouldn't want articles written by the two of you so easy to access? I can't wait for it.
Keith Ross at Sumner, I was having a brief conversation, wanted to thank us for the new app, said he had a buddy, former coach down in Arizona, said, hey, now I finally found a hub where I can get scores up to date. Loves the app. Yes, viewers, listeners, readers, check it out. It's pretty dang cool.
You're subjected to listen to the three of us, but there's a lot of people behind the scenes that were working really hard on that for a long time. So shout out to all of them at SB Live Sports. We will be back next week. Leave it here. This podcast is brought to you by SB Live Washington and SB Live Sports, your national hub for high school sports news and information. Subscribe for free wherever you get podcasts. If you do it on Apple Podcasts, please leave us a rating and review to help us best serve you, the listener. You can find our website at scorebooklive.com/Washington. There you'll see news, features, highlights, podcasts, and everything in the world of high school sports across this state. As always, a big shout out to our sponsor, Washington Federal. Thanks to Dan Dickow and Todd Millis for bringing the heat every week. The song you're hearing is by the band Woodrow. It's called So Far Away. It's written by James Schroeder, Carl Johnson, and my dad, Matt Bueller. I'm Andy Bueller. We'll be back next week.